Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. City with Kat Lessard, who I met several years ago at a Fulbright conference, and I thought we'd have a conversation today starting to talk about your work in Lesotho, because it's a place not many people go or even have heard of or know where it is on a map. And I think it's interesting that you continue long after the Fulbright has ended to go back and continue to nurture these relationships and build upon that initial experience there. And I thought it might be interesting to talk a little bit about what draws us as creative people to a place, if that's something you ever think about, is why am I still going back there? What is it, the people? Is it the experience?
It is something I think about. And I would say from the beginning of my time in Lesotho, when I first arrived in Lesotho, there was something about it that was very, very other and very different to me, but at the same time, it felt familiar. I think it felt familiar because there's a visualness to Lesotho. It's a little bit like the southwest of the United States. It's a mountainous country. It's been experiencing a decades-long drought. So it's dry, but it's absolutely gorgeous and stark and beautiful. And it also is impoverished in some ways. So my family comes from the deep south, and my father grew up on a small subsistence kind of style farm, U.S. style. And so there was something that felt visually familiar to me about the place, and also maybe kind of emotionally familiar in some way. And then I started doing work there. I went, as you were saying, on a Fulbright to teach and do research. And I began by, I came my project with Fulbright. You're supposed to have a project that you say you're coming to do. And my project was to try to look at the history there of what had been happening with people's theater. I'd been a theater person and am a theater person, and I'd done a lot of different kinds of theater. And so I was sort of tracking some earlier Fulbrighters there who had done some small theater companies, and I was also looking, theoretically, at what were the vestiges of some of the political theater movements that had started there in the 60s and 70s. Lesotho was never under the apartheid government. It's completely surrounded by South Africa, but it was never under the apartheid regime. So it also had a history of political activists coming and taking refuge there.
Oh, from South Africa.
From South Africa. Desmond Tutu taught at the National University of Lesotho at one point, and it was a very fertile and very happening place for many years. So there were all of those things. So on one level, I was going to do this research, and I was going to be teaching in the theater unit at the university, etc. But when I got there, as always happens, I think, with everyone who's ever done a Fulbright anywhere, there's what you've planned to do, and then there's actually what happens. And so I began doing other kinds of work. We did a production of Suzanne Laurie Parks's play Venus, which is about Sarki Bartman, who is also known as a Venus Hottentot, who was an African woman taken by the British to Britain and put on display there in the 1800s. And Suzanne Laurie Parks, who is an African-American playwright, wrote a piece about her, and it's a very experimental piece. So it's a very long story too much to tell now, but we began with the students. We did a production of this play, which has a lot of issues in it. It has issues of the body, it has issues of colonialism, misogyny, etc. It's experimental. And at the same time, Lesotho had, at that point, the third highest HIV infection rate in the world. And students on campus were dying. HIV at that point wasn't something talked about too much publicly. So I was working with a bunch of the theater kids, and we were having a great time, and they were very invested in doing this show. And I was also doing some other devised theater and theater for development work with some of these same students, many of whom were women. And we began to do work, almost not intentionally, somewhat, about HIV and AIDS, and to make some theater that was not didactic message theater, but to make some theater that we could put up for the entire university.
Right, and that was something you never imagined doing when you set out. You didn't know you were going to go there and do that.
So along with all of that stuff happening, I was meeting colleagues from other places that were coming through. Lesotho is a teeny tiny place where a lot happens and where a lot is going on, and there are lots of, you know, it's a crossroads of neoliberalist expansion almost, right, in some way. You know, there's a lot of development money that's come in, and on one hand that has made some things happen, and on the other hand that's been damaging in the way it's been damaging other places, you
right.
know. That's a very tricky and complicated aspect of any of the work, I think, that people do around the world. Many of us that were doing work in the 90s, the early O's, etc., were at the bubble of some of that,
yeah,
before I think there was a lot of self-reflection and before there was a whole lot of critique.
Yeah, I had that same experience on my Fulbright in Slovakia. I didn't create a project and then apply for a Fulbright. I applied for an existing position. The Academy of Fine Arts and Design there wanted to have someone come teach a program how to do project development and arts administration and actually prepare students to be professional artists working and doing project-based work. And so that's what I was going to do. And it was at a great time in my life where I was transitioning from one thing to another. Mm. And so I really just planned to do that and sort of have this time away in this country and be on this Fulbright. And then, have I ever told you this story? So then I started having conversations with people,
right,
you know, just about, well, what was your experience in the Cold War? Because I grew up in the Cold War, and I had a definite experience being in Seattle, growing up in a city that was on the coast, in a city that had armed forces and Trident submarines and, you know, nuclear drills and shelters and, you know, you did this boogeyman USSR kind of complex. So, you know, come to find out it was a real interesting mirror, their experience.
Right.
And, you know, that there was the same kind of propaganda working on both sides. But what was interesting was all the stories underneath that, that there was, life was really good in some ways for people. And they did all the things that we do. They went to school, they celebrated birthdays, they maybe took trips or maybe didn't, depending on which country in the Eastern Bloc they lived in. And the stories were so interesting, I started to write them down, and lo and behold, I had this oral history project.
Right.
So I never thought that would happen. It turned into a 3-year project that well outlived the Fulbright. But one thing that I had to keep questioning myself, this is 2006, 7, 8, 9, is what am I doing in American telling these stories or recording these stories and creating this platform for these stories to be told? And I would have that conversation with people, and they said, no one else is doing it. And the wall came down in 1989.
Right.
You know, we're going into, you know,
it's 20 years.
You're going into 20 years, and these things haven't been recorded.
Right.
So I think, you know, there was this idea of sort of being the outsider, but also really listening and being a vessel as an outsider. And not having a perspective, but rather being open and being a container that can then refract that out to the world in a way. And it worked.
And that project went on, right?
It still lives,
and it's still on.
Yeah, there's a website.
Right.
And went into exhibitions and talks, and it came to the States.
Right.
And a lot of the people who participated are colleagues now, are friends, and I still am in communication with, or we do other things together.
Right.
It built a large network, and you know, there were 20 people in the end who worked on that project.
Wow.
and all but myself and an intern were from one of the four countries that I ended up working with. So okay. It was Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Hungary. We built this sort of working team that we do other things.
Right.
And yeah, it lives on.
Would you like me to take your picture?
Picture.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you
so much. In a similar way, I had no plan to do anything beyond the year that I was going to be there teaching. And because of this theater work that we began to do with students that then also brought in other people and other colleagues from other places, a project began that is still in various ways ongoing, and that's like 12 years down the road.
Right.
And it's not like something like that would never have happened had I not gone there, but the iteration of it would have been quite different, and how that might have come together, I don't know. But it's interesting that you actually went with a definitive job to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this whole other thing happened.
Happened regardless
which
of your
definitive. Which changed my life, actually.
Yes, exactly. Well, same here.
I mean, it absolutely changed my life and other people's lives, you know. I'm very grateful for it. And the other thing that comes to mind is, you know, we have to be conscious, as I know you are, you know, of this whole colonial legacy. You know, just conscious of being American and what that means and American power. And the place of privilege we come from as Americans. But there's also this importance, which is so alive right now in our political climate, of relationship building.
Yes.
And the fact that we learn and we have something to share in the value of exchange. Mm-hmm. That's the heart of Fulbright.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was founded on. And it, when it works, it really works.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this back and forth, because we both brought people here from the countries we were hosted in or we were in. And it builds networks that are really fruitful and generative and I think increase understanding in beautiful ways. And I think the fact that it's art, that we're doing visual arts and performing arts, it's even maybe has more opportunities to blossom.
I think also the potential for anything actually developing and continuing to develop and actually having a life of its own is based on a collaborative starting point. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, you know, that there isn't one single leader, that there's a horizontal branching, or that the exchange of ideas or the exchange of the way something is created or the model by which something is created is consistently generative and not imposed. Once it was clear that something was going to be ongoing in Lesotho, and I had a colleague from the UK and one from here in New York City, a colleague of mine here, and someone from the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. We all came together, and once it was really clear that, you know, this was going to be ongoing, the idea of how do you continue a horizontal style of things being created.
Right, so you're not imposing.
So that you're not imposing, and so that it's not so careful that nothing ever happens. There's some tension there,
right?
Where everyone in the room needs to be heard and everyone in the room needs to contribute, and at some point we have to do stuff.
Right. So there's a structure, but it's a loose enough structure that there's room to build. That's really important to any kind of work, working with any community.
Yeah.
Is not coming in with this plan or this savior complex I'm going to come do this, and, you know.
Right. And the thing I think we learned, so we eventually, what happened, I was in Lesotho for a year, and then via all these colleagues and also the interest of students, the students were so jazzed by everything that was going on. We did a first international residency in Lesotho with students from New York City, students from Sunderland and the United Kingdom, students from Johannesburg, and also students from there in Lesotho. And the underlying rule was that everything had to come from the group, that, you know, that things were generated, ideas, the scenes, you know, the creative even spirit of what we made came from the people making it, that there wasn't one, or, you know, director. And then Not only did we learn a lot from that, because you never know, once people are given the thing of saying, you know, it's wide open, we want to brainstorm, we want to do ideas, we were using a lot of different theatrical modalities. But then we made a show, and we took the show into the rural areas and did it with rural villagers. And
this was the HIV show.
This is what started out as mainly a focus on HIV. We realized that even the things that university students in Lesotho, who are considered a different class of people.
Right.
You know, we missed tons of stuff. We had no clue. And our thing with the villagers that were interested in working with us was, what did we miss and what should be in this show?
Right.
And then we made another show with them based on what was missing. So it's been constantly a process of asking and including and continuing to grow things and just settling.
Wasn't part of that show dispelling some myths about HIV?
Yes, because there were fascinating myths that people, they didn't necessarily want to expose so much, but that were actually believed.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, let's put that stuff in front of people.
Right.
And see what happens when people actually see that thing and
can
talk about
it. Yeah, so can you give an example?
Well, in Lesotho, there's a big river between South Africa and Lesotho called the Caledon. And there was the idea that the virus couldn't cross the Caledon River. So that people in Lesotho, you know, and this isn't everybody in Lesotho obviously thought this, but that there was, you know, there's some belief, you know, the virus couldn't cross the river, you know. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the spread of HIV all over the world is because people travel, people migrate for jobs, people come back home,
right,
et cetera. So that was one that was really interesting to talk, you know, sort of like, and the other thing we found was one of our greatest tools was comedy.
Right.
You know, there's so much sadness and so much loss with HIV. But to try to put the lens of comedy in that and to make things like myths, you know, are actually not serving people, to kind of expose them comically as opposed to...
Finger-pointing.
Exactly.
So do you think there were people who, once that myth was questioned and performed in a context of theater, that realized, oh, this is probably not true? I mean, do you think it had an impact that way?
Assessing impact, obviously, is something, who the hell knows how to do that,
exactly,
right? You know, especially with art, you know, especially with something as ethereal and as, you know, poof, now it's here, now it's gone, as theater, you know, it happens and then it's over and then who the hell knows? But I think the zeitgeist, the world has changed since I first started going to Lesotho, which is now 12 years ago. And the conversation about things like HIV and gender iniquity and, you know, sexuality and about abortion, a lot of the things that couldn't be talked about in the early days that I was in Lesotho, because of the world and how it shifted, especially social media, so many more things, you know, are out and about and people...
are accessing them.
People access them and the conversation has changed. And there's actually more of a conversation. I hope we participated a little bit in opening the window for that conversation. I certainly don't think we made the conversation happen in any way, but I hope that we added to it. And, you know, and I have to say, I was in Lesotho this past January 2018, and I was up in an area called Malealea, where we've done a lot of work with the village communities there. It's an absolutely beautiful valley that has, I think, 17 villages in it. And I was sitting on the porch of this place, a kind of lodge, the Malealea Lodge. And I was talking to a couple of people that I knew there. And this young man came by, and he saw me and waved. And I don't know, I've been around there a lot, so people wave to me often. Tell I'm me. And then a little bit later, one of the people that I'd been talking to said, oh, you know, that young fellow was just telling me that he'd been a little boy the very first time we did a big festival show in Malealea. And he said that it had changed the valley for him and it had made it so people began to be able to talk about HIV and about the things that were troubling in the community. And the reason that that had happened was not because I was there doing that, but because in the show, there were all of these actors from the villages who had been working with us.
Yes.
So when the show happened, and it was done mostly in Sesotho, which is the language of Lesotho, it was a show of the place, created by the people there, about the way those HIV and various other issues were affecting the community.
Mahabi! Mahabi! The girls are disappearing from the village and nobody's talking about it!
The girls are disappearing.
The girls are disappearing from the village and nobody's talking about it.
We've had students that have gone on and written master's degrees and gone and, you know, based on the work they did with us and continued to create other, you know, performing arts groups and taken things out. So I don't know. It all just kind of hopefully continues to
spiral.
Yeah.
Good.
MAP Radio Hour is funded in part by the Lift Your Voice Advocacy Fund. Production by Matthew Horton. Theme song and logo by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening. And visit the Make Art with Purpose website to connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.